When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This episode is brought to you by Visit Myrtle Beach. You know what's better than getting away to a beach? Getting together at the beach. Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. They've got over 2,000 restaurants, live music playing all day and night, and endless attractions. This place was made for playing hard and beaching easy. Welcome to 60 Miles Where You Belong. The beach. Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. Plan your trip at visitmyrtlebeach.com.
Today, healthier is happening at CVS Health in more ways than you've ever seen. It's wellness destinations for seniors, including select locations with Oak Street Health and CVS Pharmacy. It's doctors, nurses, pharmacists, and everyone in between, offering quality care and support virtually, in person, and on the phone. It's in-home evaluations through Signify Health and meeting mental health needs through Aetna. And those are just a few of the ways healthier is happening. To see more, visit cvshealth.com/healthierhappenstogether. CVS Pharmacy, Oak Street Health, CVS Specialty, Signify Health, and Aetna are part of CVS Health. Eligibility and services vary by location and individual.
Yeah. Yeah, what do you want? Beak or jaws? Feathers or fur? Sharp teeth or feet with claws? Whatever's preferred. They'll grant you all last requests to steady your nerves. Then podcast the body parts, get severed and served. Bring your weak shit where the wolf and owl are. That ain't just a mistake, that's an awful howler. Both of them are known to pull up at your shows. Have the crowd witnessing a murder like they rolled in with a gang of crows. Fuck the censorship, let them see the whole thing. They stay dressed to kill, never sheep's clothing. Dark enough to turn the sun to the moon. You'll see nothing, all you hear's a huff a puff. Expect killings, red spilling and flesh ripping. Impressive in it, the death bringing his head spinning. Just kidding, every word in his song's about two grown men dressed up as a bird and a dog.
Welcome.
Wowzers. What begins with bo and ends with nuss.
Yeah, bonus episode. You made it sound like something that, like an omission. Oh no, man, I've got so much. Do you have that thing where you just got like a little spot and bonus is coming out of it? You have that, just like
bonus
just weeping.
My pants last night.
It's just weeping bonus.
Do you get spots?
I did get spots. I don't tend to get spots now. No, not really.
I have a thing in the summer. I'll get a couple of spots on the back of my neck, where it sweats.
We had a nickname about that on King Garrow.
Vesuvius.
It wasn't really that imaginative. We call you Spot Neck.
Spudnik. I genuinely get so fucking paranoid about them when I go into I think to myself, I'd rather them anywhere, like anywhere else on my face or my body than my neck.
You'd rather them anywhere on your face. Now this is a classic. This is absolutely classic, this pessimistic kind of outlook. This patently not true that you'd rather them anywhere on your body or your face. Would you like it on your eyelid?
No, they're like, not right. Okay. No. But if they're on your face, you can at least know they're there and keep an eye on them.
Yeah, that's what I like. I'd do you know what? Rather than them being sort of out of sight, out of mind, I'd much rather every single time I looked in the mirror, as confident as I am when I look in the mirror anyway, I'd like an additional decoration.
Now, I think with something like a spot, you want to be able to see what it's doing rather than it fucking, you know. Like, I always feel it's a bit like, you know, when in Stranger Things, when he puts the sort of like horrible thing in the jar, whatever it was called, and it grows into something even worse. Mm. It takes over the whole world nearly.
Yeah.
That's what I worry about with spots.
Right. That while it's back there, I mean, what a massive lack of trust you've got in Catherine there, that you don't think she'd warn you.
Oh, no, she's amazing.
If the spot on your neck was turning into an interdimensional alien.
No, she's amazing. But what my worry is if it's a spot on your face and like I'm walking down the street and I see you, right, and you see a spot on my face, we both know it's there, okay?
Yeah.
We know it's there. Yeah. If I'm going down the escalators on the tube and someone's behind me and they're like, you know, with their friend or whatever, and they nudge them and go, Sebastian, like that, look, and that they'll point at the spot. But I don't know they're pointing at the spot, but they think they've seen it, but I don't know it's there. You know what I mean?
Yeah. What's your problem with that?
Well, it's just like everyone at the spot knows. It feels like everyone else is in on the joke apart from me.
Yeah, great. Perfect. That's ideal. You know, like when people say, oh, you know, talking about people behind their backs and all that. Love it. If you hate me and you think I'm shit and you want to not say that to me and you want to keep it to yourself and just talk about it with your mates, but ideal. Do you know what I mean? I don't know about it. If there's a spot on the back of my neck that's bothering you and you're pointing at it without me ever finding out, thank you. Do you know what I mean? Like,
I constantly am thinking, what are they thinking about?
Yeah?
Yeah.
I have a thing now where I sort of got to the age, and obviously I've always had to. Do you worry sometimes that we talk about being unattractive too much on this podcast?
No, I mean, I'm not talking about unattractive. I'm saying about spots.
No, but which...
Say what you feel, brother. Say what you feel.
I've got to the point now where I feel sort of so unattractive and getting older. If I ever accidentally make eye contact with a woman, like, you know, like when you just sat on a tube or something like that or whatever. I feel like I have to apologise. Do you know what I mean? Because I feel like I just look so sort of creepy and horrible.
What do you do? Just like shake your head?
I accidentally made eye contact with a girl while she was eating recently.
Yeah, but that's like not, no matter what your age, that's not cool to do. Like staring at people when they're eating.
Okay. Look how massively you changed what happened there instantly. I said I accidentally made eye contact with someone while they're eating, right? And you've gone, oh, well, that's not right. You're staring at a girl while masturbating while she's eating.
No, I said, right, okay, you had like a little sneaky look at her. When...
I didn't have a sneaky... No. Not even that. I accidentally made eye contact with her.
Okay, what was she eating?
Like a sandwich. It was a sandwich where, like, the stuff was all falling out the bottom of it.
Oh, jeez.
You know, it was one of those... Yeah, it was, you know, she was having a tough time.
What you should have done is made a joke out of it.
As I picked up over there across the 45 minutes that I watched her doing with it.
You should have made a joke about it, though.
No, that's worse to me. You know, because a girl is struggling with a sandwich and then she's like, oh, God, I hope nobody sees this. And then somebody makes eye contact that she's not sure if it's eye contact or not because they're not both looking in the same direction. And then you go, oh, struggling with that, are you? And she thinks, oh, no, I'm in a fucking conversation with this geezer now.
No, you don't say it like that, obviously. You turn around and say, bloody sandwiches.
Oh, my God. Do you know what I think about that, about saying that? What you've done now is you've given her a problem. You've given her another problem. Right? She's already got the issue of dealing with a sandwich, and now you've got this thing that requires a response. And you know what men are like, do you know what I mean? It's like what she's worried about now is if she thinks, I do not want to talk to this predatory-looking man who's just addressed me while I'm struggling with a sandwich, right? And now I've got to respond, because if I don't respond, he'll probably go, stuck up, bitch. Do you know what I mean? No, or something like that.
But you haven't got that vibe to you. You've got a very, very sensitive, sweet vibe to you.
No. You think that, bro, because we know each other. But, like, you know, a stranger doesn't know that. Have you... Look at me. Do you think I have that sweet, sensitive vibe to me? People often talk about how I've got resting prick face. Do you know what I mean? And I told you this story last night. Tom came and did League of Their Own last night.
Yeah.
And we were chatting about it afterwards. And I told you about it. I was doing that gig in Manchester.
Yeah.
And I was doing this corporate. And I was like a surprise guest. And they got me from the hotel. I wasn't allowed to leave the hotel room. And they took me down this back route to the gig. And the woman's briefing me as I'm heading down to the gig. And then midway through, she just goes, can I just ask you something? And I go, yeah. She goes, do you actually want to be here? And I was like, sorry, what? She goes, it's just I've been talking to you about this gig. It just seems like you absolutely hate every minute of it. And then I just had to explain to her, that's just how I am. It's just my energy is that I kind of come across like I don't want to be somewhere. Do you know what I mean? Horrendous. So then you imagine that energy in a train while you're eating a sandwich.
No, but right.
And some of the stuff's full.
Okay.
And then he goes, oh, sandwiches, eh? Okay. I need to call the fucking police.
Or you just shake your head and just go, bloody hell, mate.
Or you immediately look away as I did and just let her deal with that without the added pressure of having to have a social interaction. That's kind of how I played it.
Yeah. I always quite enjoy a chat sometimes on the tube, so.
Yeah, well, this is exactly where you and I, you know, we've got a lot in common. There's a lot of things we agree on, but this is where our paths diverge.
I wouldn't have said that. The truth of the matter is, in that situation, I don't think I'd have said anything. I probably would have just shit my head and laughed. Right?
Yeah.
But
also unacceptable, by the way. You said that like that's also unacceptable.
If she was really struggling.
I want you to imagine the embarrassment of struggling with a sandwich. You look up, and some oaf just looks at you and starts laughing.
What? Okay, let me think.
Somebody with an oafish vibe that you don't know is actually a sweet, sweet, lovely man. Yeah, but
the difference between you is, right, you have a resting bitch face, right?
Yeah.
I have a resting, like, smile. Like, my vibe is very much, like, trying to sort of keep that. So I would have probably...
Sorry, are you telling me that you walk around with a smile constantly on your face? Is that what you're saying?
Not all the time, but, you know... If I'm enjoying something and I'm sort of in a happy sort of place, I'll have a little sort of smile on my face.
You'll be sitting on the tube smiling.
Yeah, I'll have a little smile when I'm on the tube.
This puts you in direct contradiction with everybody else on the tube.
Have you never chatted to someone and made sort of like...
On the tube?
Yeah.
No.
Really?
Yeah. It's bad. By the way, before people... Because we've had a conversation like this before. Because do you remember the time when you were talking about chatting to people in the pub?
Yeah.
And I sort of talked about how unacceptable I found that. Yeah. We did get a couple of emails from people going that my attitude was typical unfriendly southerner. You know, like because and Freddie's talked about this, where like northerners would like generally, and I know these are sweeping generalizations, but would generally talk to each other and be more friendly. And if you're on a train or something, you'll talk. You know, people will talk and stuff. And even when like I spent some time in America, not so much New York. New York's really quite unfriendly, but in LA, people would just talk to you in the supermarket and shit like that, and on public. Well, I've never got public transport in LA. I don't think anyone does. But like, people just chat to you. But on the tube, if somebody started talking to me, I mean, look, it's a bit different if you get recognised. I have had chats with people. I'm talking about non-recognised situations.
Yeah, but I would still. So, for example, if the tube stops in a tunnel, right?
Yeah.
And you're there, like, I always count to, like, 3 minutes. And then if we're there for over that, I will make a joke or I will say something to the people around me.
Let me tell you something. If I had the ordeal of being stuck in a tunnel for 3 minutes, wondering when this thing was to start going again, the thing that I wouldn't want to happen is a stranger look me in the eye and make a joke. Absolutely no. The last thing I'd want. Go on.
I'll say something.
So what would you say? We've been in the tunnel for 3 minutes.
Right. So, okay. How many people on this tube? Like, is it rush hour or is it sort of like 15, 20?
Let's go rush hour. Okay, what would you do in rush hour?
Rush hour. I'm standing. I've got people around me. Been there for, like, around 2 minutes. I'm just looking around, just sort of sensing the vibe, sensing what everyone's about.
And this is when what? You start writing the material, isn't it?
I start playing out the next, like, I'm thinking, right, we could be here for 5, we could be here for 10. I need to, like, lace this next line. So then I wait for the 3-minute deadline. I look around and go, don't worry, mate, I'm not in a rush.
Oh, my God. Who are you talking to? Who's the mate that you're talking to?
No, I'll look around the people. And I'll just make sure I've got a couple of people there that sort of that know I'm about to drop a bit of a line, and I'll go, "Don't worry, mate, I'm not in a rush."
Do you know what I would do if I didn't know you and you made that joke? I would actually deliberately try and make eye contact with somebody to give you the fucking eye rolling of your life.
But this is right. That's the difference between me, because you might not like that, and there would always be naysayers, right?
I won't naysay you. I'll just silently hate you.
And then other people around will go, yeah, exactly, mate. Yeah, either am I. I look at their watch. And then if I get a good vibe back, I'll then sort of launch into a couple more things.
See, there you go. And that's the risk that you run there, because now these people are thinking, okay, he's dropped that absolute fucking egg after 3 minutes. God knows what's going to happen after 10 or 15.
I have done it. I have, right, I've done that a couple of times. A few times I've come in and I've laced it, and I've actually sort of, from there, I've had a good vibe. I've saved the moment.
You haven't saved the moment. But what I will hold up my hands and say, I've seen you not stuck in a tube situation, but I have seen you sort of riffing with strangers and stuff and doing that stuff. You are actually very good at it. You're a master of the craft.
Yeah, but
It so has, maybe it's jealousy talking on my part.
It has backfired somewhat, and I've been in those situations, and I've said something, and someone sort of like tutted, or someone in the tube goes, "Yeah, all right, mate, we all know, yeah," and sort of like, yeah, and then it's
hold on, Tom.
Genuinely,
has that honestly happened?
Yeah. So what, no, not after the first line. It's happened when I've sort of made a couple of jokes, and I'm sort of
20 minutes into the fucking Netflix special that you're delivering without anybody's request.
And then there's been like, I remember quite distinctly one guy was like, "Oh mate, it's bad enough," or something like that. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, limited oxygen in here, mate. You're taking it all up with your hack routine about public transport.
I remember getting stuck on the train, and then I was on there for like, we were stuck on the train for about an hour and a half, and there was a load of people who were going to the rugby and their tickets, and that was the hardest crowd that I've ever played to.
Oh my God, just keep quiet. Put your headphones on, look down, and hope to God nobody interacts with you. That's my strategy.
My worry is, right, that everyone's going to be, there's animosity is going to be rife after a while, and aggression's going to start seeping in.
Yeah.
And what do you do with the fire? You don't wait for it to become a burning blaze before you put it out. You get to it when it's in its infancy, right?
Well, that's the difference between you and I, you know, because you see silence as a fire, whereas I see it as something nice to just sort of enjoy for a bit.
Yeah, but train-wise, mate, and I don't know if you've ever been stuck on a train for a length of time.
I have, yeah.
You know yourself that there's a rumbling underneath that's always going to come out and bite you on the butt. So you've really got to pay heed to it. And that's what our job is in life.
Yeah, I just don't agree. You know, if somebody looks like they need help, then, you know, I'll happily chat. If somebody looks like they're stressed out, I will calm them down, will say something to reassure them. What I won't do is look around and think to myself, well, seems like we've found ourselves with a little audience here.
You know, this is the saddest thing that I've just remembered.
Yeah. Well, God.
On that train that was there, stuck for an hour and a half, I went to the toilet, but I didn't need to go to the toilet. I just went to walk past people's tables and make sure everyone was all right and sort of chat to people. I walked down the aisle just going, "You all right, everything all right here?"
Honestly, I don't know if there'll be any one of those people that think you're a better person as a result of you having done that.
I did, mate. I was just, mate, genuinely worried about people.
And what do you mean you're genuinely worried about people? So you walked up and... If you're worried about people, leave them the fuck alone. I've also seen you, by the way. It's like, when after we did House of Fools, where we get the train back from Manchester. What was it you were saying? You actually went up to a member of staff on the train. As we're walking down to the, you'd be unsurprised to hear that Tom and I were walking down to the refreshments carriage. And we walked past the member of staff and you went, "Oh, mate, somebody back there causing a right load of trouble. I'd get down there as soon as I could if I was you."
Yeah, I like a joke with the old train staff.
It's not a joke, is it? You've wasted their time.
That was one of my favourite ever train journeys, because you were, I was worried about you because it was a long old train journey and you seemed
it was
quite...
a long old train journey off the back of dying on my arse on the set of House of Fools, yeah.
We both died. It was terrible. It was awful.
It was a lovely experience for all the regular cast who are so loved by many. And
even on the train, it was like they were loved. They were like sort of celebrated.
It was insane. And then it was like we're fucking West Ham playing at Millwall. It was insane, man.
It was
just like you and I backstage watching all the regulars deliver their lines to absolute fucking rapturous like laughter and ovations. And then we managed to convince ourselves that we might get something like that. We go out there. Fucking, I'm doing better in this conversation than I did on House of Fools.
Mate, I've had better train gigs. I've had better tube gigs than that. You know, that feeling we were talking about a bit yesterday, that thing where when you die and you die badly on stage or in any sort of comedy arena, the feeling that everyone else around you knows you've died and knows you've had an absolute ricker, and then you're like, they don't even make eye contact with you. It's almost like it's like they can't talk. They can't even bring themselves to say anything to you. It's the worst feeling.
Yeah, it's much worse when you're first starting out because people don't have... Because often the other thing I'd say about comedians is, and it's true of us as well, is that however somebody does the first time you see them is kind of what you carry with you as your opinion of them for a while. And it takes a few good gigs to kind of shake that. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
So, and so you, because of that, you're aware that that's how other people perceive it, right?
Yeah.
So then when you have a terrible gig, to go into the green room and just to go, not only do the audience out there think I'm shit, but now this group of my peers think I'm shit as well. It's horrendous. But now, like, for example, if you and I, you know, you and I gig together every now and again, if I see you die on your ass, I would just find it funny because I know that you're funny. Like, it's not like I'm not watching somebody shit die. If somebody shit dies, it's a horrible thing to watch. If somebody great dies, I actually quite enjoy it because it's something I can't wait to talk.
I think when you start out, the feeling is, it's like you've sort of caught like something and everyone just, I remember doing it I even remember the people in the room. And I was fairly new to stuff. I think the first time I died was probably my fourth gig. I was like really fucking, you know, that thing of the gigs you do before, you probably haven't done that well, but you just caught up in the adrenaline. But I remember dying really so badly in about my fourth gig and then just looking around the room, just sort of like for someone experienced to come over and say, oh, you know what, it's fine. That happens. Don't worry about it.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. But everyone sort of like was like putting their stuff together and just staring over like, oh no, like, you know, I doubt it'll be back type thing. And me being a positive guy, I was trying to make the most out of it.
Yeah.
Like sort of, yeah. That's all right, wasn't it? Oh, well, yeah, it's bloody ass. Might see you next week sort of thing.
Oh, it's horrible.
I remember sort of like leaving the room and there was about 8 audience members. It was just, fucking horrible.
I did a corporate gig, right? And it was, I better not name the company because it went pretty badly. But anyway, it was like a rewards weekend for them. So like they'd made their sales targets for the year or something. So it's a big company wide, have a weekend of entertainment and like food and booze or whatever to say, you know, well done. So I was booked to do the gig and I turned up at this and they took me to this hotel room to like chill in till my starting time. And I was with Flo's brother actually. My agent Flo, her brother was like drove me there to the gig or whatever. John. And so we turned up at this hotel room and the bloke like running the gig or that had booked me was going, look, I know that some corporate gigs are a bit stuffy, they're a bit difficult, but trust me, you're going to have a great time tonight. It's going to be like, you know, it's not like these regular gigs. These lot are crazy. They love a good time. I think you're going to find it a little bit different to your usual thing. Immediately, alarm bells start ringing for me, right?
Right.
Do you know what I mean? Because what he's basically saying to me is all these people think they're like really, really funny.
Yeah, and it's so, the worst thing.
Yeah. So anyway, I said to John, I'm a bit nervous about this now. Do you know what I mean? We go down to the gig. The guy gives me an insane introduction, like so over the top, right? This next geezer, possibly one of the greatest comedians in the world, and we've managed to get him here for you. Next, like unbelievable. People have wanted to book him. Nobody can, like just really... like so much fanfare. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I come on, right? Honestly, there is more crowd noise on this Zoom than there was in the room. Like I was doing bits, like doing my routine to nothing. Not even, it was like I was performing to a photograph of the audience. They just sat there completely still and silent, right? I do my time because one of the things about corporates is no matter how much you're dying, if you don't do your time, you might not get paid, right? Yeah. So I did 20 minutes, probably did about 3 hours worth of material in that time because there was no gaps for laughter. I leave the stage. I say to John, let's get the fuck out of here as quick as we can, right? We run out of the back of the thing, get lost in the sort of maze of the downstairs area of that hotel, end up, right, walking towards the door that the audience are coming out of after my set.
Oh.
And literally, as I'm walking up the corridor, I hear a bloke go, I mean, he was one of the shittest comics I've seen in a long time, right? I mean, he looks at me, and possibly one of the only examples of eye contact that I would say is worse than Sandwich Girl. We make eye contact. We both know, without saying anything to each other, what has just happened. And I can't explain to you, in that second, we make an agreement that we're not going to acknowledge this any further. And then I just turn around and sort of run away in the other direction. Oh, absolutely rank. anyway, we're supposed to be in an email.
Have you ever done a birthday? Have you ever done a birthday, just quickly?
Yeah, I've ever done a birthday.
They're the worst as a stand-up.
I get a lot of messages and I just, and you know, if we can spread the word here, and I'm going to spread the word on your behalf as well. Tom and I will not do birthdays or weddings or anything like that.
Okay? I won't be doing stand-up at them anyway.
No.
Like,
because let me just say something. If you think it's a good idea to have a stand-up that you that your family don't know at your wedding or your birthday, let me just tell you this. It's not a good idea.
Let me say, the worst thing about doing them at birthdays, and recently a friend of mine asked me, he actually asked me if me and you would go and do the spot, and I said, look, the truth is, with these things, right, with when it comes to doing these at weddings and birthdays,
yeah,
it's probably only about 5% of the audience even keen to sort of see a stand-up. The rest of the people want to be chatting to people they haven't seen for a while, enjoying the fucking birthday. I did a birthday out in Essex, right? I went out on stage, and like yourself, it was like the guy again, it was in sort of like Murder and Success was in its pomp. He sort of introduced me and he was like, I didn't even know this guy. I did stand up. We're very fortunate. You know, I get up and it was agonizingly, you know, more people was just walking away really. You know, they had the option of sort of standing and watching me in this sort of tent thing, they marquee they put up, or being outside. And everyone, by the end of it, there was like the guy who booked me who was really sort of like trying to, you know, it was his wife's birthday, I think. And yeah, you know, she sort of could, you could see her just sort of like wanting to get out of there, but he'd sort of go, no, stay, it's really funny. I think he was enjoying the fact that I died really badly. And then I sort of came on stage wanting to cry, just wanting to cry, like genuinely, oh, like mate, thinking this has been awful. And knowing that I had about fucking two odd hours to get home. And then he turned around and was like, oh man, that was great. That was brilliant. I was like, it was. Yeah, why did everyone leave? And he was like, oh, yeah, no, a lot of them don't really like stand-up, but, you know, da-da-da.
Oh, my God.
So then he said, I'll stay for a beer. It'd be good. And sort of, like, network a bit and chat to people. And I ended up staying there for, like, 2.5-3 hours, sort of.
Okay. Why?
I ended up...
Why?
But I think this was my way of dealing with it, right? And it's just pathetic. I have a really sad version of myself, which is like, I want people to go, yeah, he wasn't that funny, but he was a really nice guy. And I sort of thought, oh, I've really ruined this girl's birthday. If I stay around. So I individually went round and started doing my bits of my set, sort of dropping them into conversation with various members of the family. So sort of like, I go over and talk to a group and sort of crack a few jokes. And
I mean, it's an incredibly time inefficient way, but you know, I can see how that would
work. By the end of it, my ego was slightly back. I felt better, yeah, about myself, and actually felt like, you know what, I had made some people laugh who were at the party, mm, you know, by walking over and just going, you da da da, and having a bit of a crack with them.
Yeah. So my reaction to that would be, I've been Ramesh Ranganathan, thank you very much. Hope you enjoy your birthday. I would have walked off stage, literally into a car, and never got in touch with anyone again because I'd have just been so mortified. But I actually think that your strategy was quite... You know what? I'm going to tell you this now. It took guts.
Thank you, brother.
It took courage. It showed a kindness of spirit in you that you felt like you hadn't done the job properly, so you wanted to make amends for that. And I think it's just one of the myriad of reasons that I think you're a wonderful bloke.
Thank you, well done. Thank you. Just quickly, the guy just tried to haggle me down for my payment even after that.
Oh, God. After you spent 3 hours there?
Yeah.
Oh, but mate, if you're listening to this, you're an absolute prick.
I doubt anyone at that birthday party is tuning into anything I've done subsequently to that party.
This episode is brought to you by Visit Myrtle Beach. You know what's better than getting away to a beach? Getting together at the beach. Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. They've got over 2,000 restaurants, live music playing all day and night, and endless attractions. This place was made for playing hard and beaching easy. Welcome to 60 Miles Where You Belong. The beach. Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. Plan your trip at visitmyrtlebeach.com.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Right, time for some emails. Once again, thank you to The Swan, who I'm going to be honest with you. I had a little bit of a moment with this week. She probably won't want me to share this on the podcast, but I'm going to. I accepted a delivery of two huge boxes that were supposed to be to the house that we're moving into.
Oh no!
And so we've now got two massive boxes. So to give you an idea of what happened, she went to the house.
Yeah.
To accept the delivery, she's been taking care of it. She's phoned up the company 3 or 4 times to clarify that it needs to go to that address.
Yeah.
She told me that's what she was doing. I was at home. So bearing in mind, she's given me that information. The delivery has turned up at this house and me just being in the middle of whatever, being a pathetic man, can't multitask. I've seen this delivery and rather than going, oh, this must be what Lisa told me about and why she's at the other house, I've just accepted the delivery. I then phone Lisa and I say, there's two massive boxes. And that poor woman has to deal with the fact that not only has she wasted her time waiting in this other house, but her dickhead of a husband has phoned her to tell her that he's accepted the delivery that she's told him about. I mean, it was bad. I just want to take this opportunity to say to the Swan, I'm really sorry.
Wow.
And I love you.
Did she shout at you?
No, she didn't shout. She's never shouted at me, ever.
Really?
But she wasn't happy. She was not happy. We don't really shout. It's more kind of, I would say it goes quieter rather than louder.
Well, yeah.
Things are going badly. Yeah. Right, time for our first email of the bonus episode. Hi, Swan, Owl and Wolf. Firstly, I have to say how much me and my husband love this pod. Thank you for all the laughs. I'm a huge fan of sitcoms. My top three are constantly changing. My number one is Always Only Fools, but after that, I struggle to choose. Some of my faves are The Office, UK and US Outnumbered, Motherland, One Foot in the Grave, Ab Fab, Friends, and of course, King Gary. But the list is endless. So my question to you guys is, what is your top three? Thanks, gang. Keep doing you. And as always, take it to the max. Your main girl, the Red Squirrel.
The Red Squirrel?
Yeah.
Where is this? My favorite.
I wonder why she specified Red Squirrel. Is it because of this ongoing anti-immigration narrative of people hating grey squirrels?
Yeah. You love politics, sorry. Don't you?
Anyway, go on. That was so funny. It was like you know the way you said that was like a mate that you're just so tired of bringing the conversation always back to fucking the state of the country. It's oh god, here we go.
We're talking
about what to have for lunch, and this guy's talking about the lunch choices representing the colonialism of the British Empire. Anyway, go on, sir.
I think The Office would have to be out there for me.
I'd agree with that.
The
Swan has picked this email out without. I mean, it's a very difficult question to answer, isn't it?
I'd say Fools or Modern Family. I'd say my favourite, the one that I think is Eastbound and Down. I think would be.
Oh my god!
I think it's an incredible piece of work.
So good, Eastbound and Down. If you've not watched Eastbound and Down, watch it right now. Press pause on the podcast. Go away and watch every episode of Eastbound and Down and then come back and listen to the rest of it.
Sweet Danny McBride is the guy.
He's pretty much great in everything, I'd say.
He's incredible. Yeah. And he gets it. He gets it big.
Felt like we're having a real conversation there.
No.
You sort of did something that's quite performative there. I don't know what you were trying to achieve.
He's very good, man. He's very good.
He's really good. So Eastbound and Down. I really like, and I know I'm talking about American ones here, but I really like It's Always Sunny.
Always Sunny
in Philadelphia.
Yeah.
It's really good. I love that. That show, so for those people that don't know anything about it, it's about these four people that run a bar. Danny DeVito's in it. But they're all so unlikable.
Yeah.
Like, they're all such terrible people. Whenever you're writing about, or whenever you're taught about writing or told about how to write a sitcom and stuff, or anything actually, you know, it's always like you've got to have characters that people want to root for. And the easiest way to do that is to make your characters really likable. What's more difficult is to make your characters flawed and horrible, but still have the audience root for them. It's a really difficult thing to manage, and they do that so well, man.
I'll tell you, if you go back to sort of look at the one that broke the wheel in a lot of ways, and I think you can see shades of it in everything. I think Seinfeld was, you go back and see what an incredible bit of work that, because that essentially is that it's four people who aren't particularly nice people.
Yeah.
You know, but actually, if you look at, go back and look at the storylines for it, how many of those storylines wound up becoming a storyline in Friends or Modern Family or anything? It's sort of like, it was so brave in its content, Seinfeld.
Mm.
It, you know, obviously, because now when you watch Curb, you see, you'd see stuff that Larry David's clearly gone, that was my version of this, that could go out at 9 o'clock or whatever, or 8:30, whenever Seinfeld went out. And this is my version that can go out in Curb. It's going to be slightly more barred. And it's like Seinfeld is, I think, I'd probably actually think about probably to put that in my top three. As a, if there's anything that you look at as the a work of art that you can go, oh, that's how you intertwine three storylines, that's how you get every four main characters and get them into an episode. Seinfeld's a sort of the basis we're all working from.
I mean, I know we all love The Office and it's an incredible piece of work. The American Office is also amazing.
Yeah,
I mean, it ran on for so much longer, obviously.
Yeah.
But some of the stories that they drop and pick up much later and things that are introduced that pay off maybe even one or two series later are just incredible, man.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just...
He's amazing as well.
Who, Steve Carell?
Yeah, he's just... Yeah. He's phenomenal.
He's great, man. He's great. But then even like in the later series after he leaves, it's really sad when he leaves, but like when they've got like Robert California running The Office and, you know, Andy Bernard's running it and all that. Yeah. All of those, even after... I mean, the Steve Carell episodes probably are the best, I think, but even after, it's still great. I mean, it's, yeah, it's a great
show.
Have
you seen a film he's done called Welcome to Marlin?
No, I've not seen it.
Oh, my God. So good. But really? So, yes, yeah, really sad.
Yeah.
Yeah, really sad. It's about a guy who plays with his toys, but he, yeah, he's had an awful
time. Shit, I know, I've seen, that's it looks wicked, that.
Yeah.
Okay, so there you go. I hope that's answered your question. Neither of us gave you a top three, but, you know, what you're going to do, it's a tough question. Next up, hi, Rom, Tom and Swan. Hi, guys, the last time I contacted you was, this is a repeat email. This is from the Tapir. Do you remember the Tapir?
Oh, yeah, I do, yeah.
What did you think he'd... What did you think he'd got wrong or something? You thought, I can't remember anyway. The last time I contacted you, I was venting about the loss of my camembert dish. As a result, I blasted my housemates for breaking it. However, there have been some recent developments. Since I shared the start of this story with you, listeners, I feel it's only right that I provide some closure. To my bewilderment, I recently found said camembert dish, fully intact, sitting at the back of a cupboard I rarely use. Of course, I was happy to see it again. But I couldn't help wondering where I'd got the impression it'd been broken in the first place. I mentioned in the last email that the housemates aren't the tidiest of people. This, paired with the fact I couldn't find the thing for almost 7 months, means I must have just assumed that they'd broken it at some point. Of course, now I feel like a prize idiot. Not only have I blamed them for something they never did, but to think this misunderstanding has now been broadcast to hundreds of people. I think you find it's thousands, mate. I'm feeling pretty crummy right now. I'm glad I'll be eating camembert again. However, I'd like to treat this whole situation as a life lesson, or rather, a few life lessons rolled into one. This guy really, really gone to town on this. So, lesson one, reserve thy judgment. Yes, these guys are dead messy, but what matters is they're kind, harmless people. At the end of the day, would you rather live with messy sweethearts or tidy wankers? Lesson two, don't name call. Describing these guys as swines was a bit harsh. Pigs are, in fact, more intelligent than dogs and have a lot going for them, which is sort of a contradiction there. Can you hear screaming?
Yeah, a little bit.
You know the problem with our children?
Go on.
Is that they scream for anything. So that could be that he's just done well on Injustice on the PlayStation or that someone's trying to kill him. it's just the same noise for every situation. So anyway, lesson three, never ever assume. It makes an ass of you and me. And lesson four, I know you heard this before, never get high on your own supply. Wait, that's something else. Okay, I'm gonna level with you, Tapir. This needed to just be one lesson, okay? Because a lot of these are repetitious, and the last one doesn't.
I think Tapir, the lesson we can all take away from it is you shot your gun without looking at the target, and you should have. Yeah, you flew off at the hip of these guys. And I think, I think
shot from the hip.
Yeah. I think you could ask us all to learn a lesson. I think the person who mainly needs to learn a lesson is you, in fact. And actually, Do you know when you hear something and you, I don't know. I actually feel for the housemates here.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. Because, you know, like at first I sort of, when we first had for the Tapia, I really felt sorry for the Tapia. And I think, you know, and actually now when you hear this, you think actually the Tapia might be the sort of fly in the ointment of this house.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
That's pretty harsh from you. Why do you think that?
I don't know. I think that the Tapia's come in. He's written it. They've written to us, right?
Yeah.
I remember at the time feeling very sorry for the Tapia. And now when you break this down...
As you've said the name repeatedly, I've remembered what the issue is. So it's Tapir.
Yeah.
T-A-P-I-R.
Yeah.
And I remember last time you said you thought that it was Tapia misspelled.
Yeah.
The fish. And now you repeatedly refer to them as the Tapia. So now, thank you for reminding me what happened.
Well, I mean, what do you think about this? I'm sort of I'd like to speak to the housemates, really.
Look, I think the Tapia is they've jumped to conclusions, but at the same time, if the camembert dish has been missing for 7 months, then it's reasonable to assume it's been broken. What I would say
just quickly, I'm just going to throw this in, right? If you care that much about the camembert dish, right, and it's just in the back of another cupboard, how much did you care that you didn't look for it that hard?
Okay, you've really gone from being sort of quite reluctant to criticise the Tapia to really fucking going in two-footed now.
No, I'm just saying.
My issue is less about the not looking for it and more that just sort of ask the housemates. Yeah. I don't know if... the point is, look, the truth is that it's a happy ending. The camembert dish is there. And it's also, just to sort of make you feel a little bit bad, the address for my pub, Tapia runs a pub, is enclosing this email. I would love to pour you guys a pint one day and apologise in person for wasting your time talking about camembert.
I would love to. Whereabouts is the pub?
Well, in that case, I don't think you should go to the pub. How can you fucking 180 like that?
Because it's a free
pint. You just described the tap here as the fly in the ointment of his home situation.
Where is the pub?
It's in Sheffield.
Oh, right. It's not too far away, actually.
Well, no, what?
Well, yeah, it's quite a long way away, but... If we're ever in Sheffield, I want to meet the housemates and just get everyone together and go, I could bang your bloody heads together, you lot. You bloody nutters.
You bloody... Him and his camembert, you and you lot, and your lack of tidiness, honestly. It's like a sitcom. It'd be a dreadful sitcom that'd be cancelled after the first series, but sitcom nonetheless. Okay. Want another?
Yes,
I think you do.
My darling.
Hello to the dearest wolf, owl, swan, and cat.
Wow, the cat kids. Nice? That's nice.
Yeah. First of all, I wanted to say how much I enjoy your podcast. Your sense of humour and words of advice are so lovely and easy, easy listen to.
Mm-hmm.
May I also say how pleasantly surprised I am about how you've spoken about women in a positive and balanced way. Not that I'd assumed you were both sexist, but it's refreshing to hear two grown men speak about women and about how other men should speak about women in a balanced way. So thank you. I'm writing to you both to ask you for some advice regarding my lovely husband. We've been married for 8 years, and over these years, I've gotten to know him, his best and worst bits fairly well. This lovely man has always struggled with his weight. He's never happy with how he looks, and since I've known him, his weight has always fluctuated along with his self-esteem. Obviously, as both of you have openly discussed this in the past, brackets possibly too much, I did that because of my own self-consciousness, she hasn't said that. There are many issues involved with this. When his weight is at the lower end of the scales, he will happily buy himself clothes. Lovely, good quality clothes that he's proud of. However, the rest of the time he refuses to buy clothes for work or anything else. His current clothes are in such bad taste, washed out, holes in his trousers, buttons missing on shirts. I've approached the subject on various occasions with him and he's refusing to buy new clothes because he's not at his target weight. My question to you both is, what do I do about this? Do I go and buy him new clothes? Although he's told me in the past that he hates the clothes I buy him, even though I try and buy exactly the ones exactly like the ones he has. Or do I let him stay in the same clothes, both for work or for social times, despite the bedraggled appearance? I hope you can shed some light on this problem. Many thanks, your number one Northern Irish fan.
Well,
Tom, I imagine you've got a bit to say on this, my dear.
Shout out to Northern Ireland for a start. Yeah, thanks for listening. I would say it's a difficult one, isn't it? Because I'm at the moment in a position where I've lost a bit of timber and moving into... I've literally just got, like a snake, just got rid of like loads of my old sheaths, my old skins.
Have you managed to make that sound disgusting? Well, what's actually happened is you've lost some weight and you've got rid of some of your old clothes. That's all you need to say.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But I was trying
like to a snake getting rid of its old sheaths. It's just horrendous. Just in my head, I've got a snake throwing away some used Johnnies.
I wonder if a snake could use a Johnny as a coat.
Yeah, that's a great question.
No, no. If it, like if a snake,
email into the wolfhourpod@gmail.com.
If there's any, like, what are they called? Reptilians who look after reptiles. Reptilians.
Yeah, reptilians, I think, are creatures from the reptile world.
All right.
I don't think you'd go into a pet shop and go, got any reptilians about?
No, reptilians are experts on reptiles.
No.
Are you sure?
No. I'll look it up.
I'm sure.
Okay, let me look it up for you. And I'm just going to read the definition, whatever it is to you, because... So, reptilians. Reptilians are blood-drinking, flesh-eating, shape-shifting, extraterrestrial reptilian humanoids with only one objective in their cold-blooded little heads.
Oh, okay.
So, I think reptilian is what you refer to it, a human. You know, like David Icke.
Oh, yeah.
He's a sort of reptilian overlord, I think that's what...
Yeah, I don't know too much about David Icke, but I don't like his buzz. Anyway, back to the question in hand. I think it's very hard when you're carrying weight to feel good about yourself. Like for me, anyway, when I'm carrying excess, like I'm overweight, I genuinely put everything on and just go, oh, this looks horrible. You get that fucking horrible gape in your shirt. You know, your jeans are too tight around your waist and then sort of flip out the butt. Yeah, I would say is finding stuff, though, that can look good that doesn't necessarily require... Sort of that tight fit. I mean, if I think the best thing in the world, Ramesh uses them, I use them, is a nice overshirt. I think a sweet, sweet overshirt, something that looks good on that basis that he can wear. He can wear it open with a nice T-shirt underneath. I think the fact of the matter is, though, I literally started losing weight again because I started putting on clothes, looking at myself and going, this used to look so good. I had a Stone Island jumper. We went out. I think I told this story the other day and someone literally was like, didn't they do that in your size? And from that moment, I was like, actually, number one, that's hurt my feelings.
Well, first of all, fuck that guy.
But number two, I'm like, this used to look better on me. And now I have to lose weight so it looks better again.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it's not good enough. Yeah, you don't get me wrong. It was a nasty thing to say, but...
Nasty. Yeah,
mean and vile. So yeah. I would say...
Rude.
Yeah. I would say I'd like to put an arm around your fella and just go to the gym with him and just fucking, yeah, work out together. Yeah. And make you feel better.
I think, number one Northern Irish fan, is I always think, look, Tom's done very well and we're both trying to lose weight at the moment. Tom's doing much better than I am. But one of the things that I think is difficult is when you have some clothes, like aspirational clothes, do you know what I mean? Where like you've got a set of clothes that you're hoping that you're going to shrink down into or whatever. It's never a good thing because it's just like a target to beat yourself with. One of the things that's very true about people, and I think this is true of me, is that whenever I felt at my lowest ebb mentally, you start to let go of looking after how you look. You know, you stop looking after your hair, you stop working on yourself, you stop dressing well. And actually what happens is that kind of, I feel like it kind of snowballs and you generally become sort of unhappy in everything, really. I'm not saying that, If you know, it's the old thing, if you look good, you feel good. But I think that, you know, if you actually take care in your appearance and look after yourself a bit, and that includes like, you know, exercising, eating well, blah, 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 you're just generally happier. So what I would say is I'm not saying it's something to worry about, but I don't think, you know, it's not nice for your husband to be wearing like shitty clothes. I don't know what your budgetary requirements are, but I would do a little bit of research with him or do a bit of shopping together or something, make a thing of it. Depending on what your budget is, there are people that you can consult. They do online things. There's like websites where you put in your dimensions or whatever and talk about and say what kind of things you're into, what kind of looks you're into, and they'll send you stuff that meets those requirements. You know, like you can look good if you're bigger. Like I know Tom's sort of saying about this guy with the Stone Island shirt. Tom always looks great. He dresses great. Do you know what I mean? And like, you know, even when he's bigger, he looks great. And it's that thing of like, you know, I know that we all get caught up in the thing of like clothes companies want slim people to wear their clothes. And Tom and I have talked about this in the past. But like Tom said, you can look, you know, you can look presentable. You can look really good when you're bigger. And it's just a matter of like of trying to do that. So I really do think if you put a bit of kind of time, and if he puts a bit of time, and if you can try and get him to be open to the idea of shopping for nice clothes, despite the fact he's feeling bigger, actually what he'll suddenly discover is he looks good, even though he's a weight he's not that keen on. And he might just be a bit happier in himself, I think. Do you know what I mean? It's like, if you want to lose weight for health reasons and stuff like that, and you've got, you know, you've got genuine proper reason you want to do it, then great. But dressing like shit when you're at your bigger weight, it's like fucking compounding the problem. Do you know what I mean? He already feels low because he's put on a bit of weight, and then on top of that, he's wearing shit clothes. Do you know what I mean? Get drippy, mate.
Yeah.
Fabulize yourself.
Get drippy with it.
You know? Should we do one more, Tommy?
Let's do one more, my sweet prince.
Okay. Dear Wolf, Owl and Swan, I recently moved house, brackets, I was living in a house with a family in London, just renting their spare room, and I've moved in with my boyfriend and our friend. After leaving the family, I got a message saying I'd left a few things behind. They said a pair of jeans and some other knickknacks. I went to collect them, had a nice chat and headed home. Upon returning home, I opened the bag, and as I looked inward to see the tat I'd reclaimed, my heart dropped like a stone. Nestled amongst the miscellaneous girl crap and pens, I noticed that somehow I'd left Mr. Buzz, my bright pink rabbit vibrator, who was now staring up at me.
Oh,
a wave of horror washed over me. I imagined both the discovery and subsequent conversations within the family, and I felt disgustingly embarrassed ever since. Now, I'm aware you're both men and probably haven't left your vibrators anywhere, so maybe the Swan could give me a bit of advice as well, if she doesn't mind. Well, she hasn't openly discussed it with me recently, but based on what our activities are, I imagine she's got an extensive collection of vibrators. I don't know whether I should message them apologising or leave it. They're adamant they wanted to stay in touch when I moved out, as we all got on very well. I just don't want to send a Christmas card this year and be remembered as a pink rabbit vibrator lodger forever on. But then again, I'm sure that ship has sailed. Any help would be greatly appreciated, and your podcast has never failed to cheer me up and make me laugh. Take care. She's not said anonymous, so I'll give her name, Jess.
Wow, Jess. Wow, what a conundrum. I think the truth of it, and number one, I think they're wrong here. Do you know what I mean?
Why are they wrong?
Because I think that's a bit that when you say, oh, look, you've left a few bits behind, they don't have to put that in the bag. Do you know what I mean? Like, what I'd have done is not put it in the bag and just give them back everything else and not put that in, because that's awkward for everyone, right? I think I'd have just gone, right, let's throw that in the fucking bin and give her back everything else. Because it's so awkward for poor Jess.
Yeah, sure. It is awkward for Jess, but they don't know that Jess had forgotten that she'd left the vibrator there. So if Jess thinks she's left the vibrator there and then they return the stuff, they run the risk of her going, oh, that's weird, they've kept my vibrator.
Yeah, well, that is weird, right? That is weird.
Right.
But you must know, if you're putting that in a bag, like, she's going to fucking... Poor Jess is going to feel embarrassed by this. You must, right? There's no way anyone in the world is sort of like, oh, I hope my pink vibrator is still in there. Like,
well, do you know that for definite? Because they might just be quite liberated and sort of think, you know, vibrators are a normal thing.
Yeah, a normal thing, you know? Yeah, but...
People got to do what they got to do.
Then in that case, make a joke out of it.
Right. Go on. So tell me...
My point is sneakily put into the bag.
If you were the father of the family,
yeah,
you're involved in this family, you've had a lodger... Now, let me tell you something. If we'd had a lodger,
yeah,
and I was packing up their stuff and I found a vibrator,
yeah,
first of all, I don't even know how I would sort of broach that. I'd feel very sort of...
I'm not
prudish. I'd feel slightly kind of... Anyway,
yeah.
So you find this vibrator, you pack it up. What would you say?
Firstly, I would go down the avenue of going, number one, like, let's not put this in the bag and let's just fucking dispose of it. Like, you know,
and
whatever.
Then they would make the clear argument that it just looks like you've thrown away someone's vibrator and that's an insane idea.
Right.
So then you've got to return it, okay? So then what happens?
I would probably just make it... Because what's happened is this is where we come back to the train thing. You got to say something about it, you know? Like, if you're giving it back... Because the truth of the matter is, Jess, right? Now Jess has got this amazing family she was friends with, da-da-da, live with them... Right, and now she feels awkward about the whole thing because it's sort of awkwardly being put into a bag. I personally would wait for them to get in touch with you. That's what I'm saying. I just think because there's no, like, when you've done something, and I've been in lots of situations where I can tell you where I felt embarrassed or felt silly about something, or, you know, I felt like people have judged me. We're talking about Spotgate again, right? Yeah. I felt like that. But don't get me wrong. These people might not even think about it. It might never be a thought. Jess is obviously thinking about it. She's emailed in about the problem, right? And how she feels about it. I can see where Jess is coming from. I would wait for them to get in contact. I would probably wait then before I ever mentioned it again. And if I'd wait for them to make a joke out of it.
So what, Jess is never going to contact them again?
I'd wait to see, like, let them fold first. Let them message her and then message them back.
Okay.
But I just think, okay. The truth of the matter is they might be liberated people. They might just be like, oh, it doesn't really matter. It's fine. Do you know what I mean? It's cool. Like, whatever. People got to do their thing. But for Jess, it's very embarrassing. And I can see that she's obviously mortified because it's straight away gives them a way of thinking about, you know, something different from the, you know.
Yeah.
I get it. We all do stuff.
If I was a family, what I would have done was I would have taken all the stuff and I would have put it in a cardboard box and I would have, like, taped the box shut, right?
Yeah.
And then I would have got in touch with Jess and I said, because we're using the room, we got the room a proper deep clean, so we got a cleaner in to tidy everything up and, like, give it a proper clean. And just as she was, like, after she finished the job, she gave us this sealed box with a load of stuff that I think is yours. Come and collect it whenever you want. So then Jess thinks that it wasn't them that found it. It's some random cleaner that she doesn't know. And
that is
and
a good. That's probably one of the best plans you've ever had.
Thanks so much. Thank you. Thank you so much for sort of both complimenting me and insulting me at the same time.
I would say also the worry is, right, is the fact they use the phrase knickknacks.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, no. We don't know that they definitely use that. That might be just paraphrasing.
I would just say that when you use that, it's a very, what's the thing when you're being aggressive, but you're not being aggressive in your language?
Passive aggressive.
Yeah, that's exactly what that is.
What? Knickknacks is not passive aggressive.
It is very, Oh, yeah. What, when you're talking about Pink Velvet, I think it's definitely without a doubt.
No, if you've left some of your
but you've specified
toys and assorted amusements.
Yeah. If you've gone, like, you've left your jeans and some knickknacks.
I mean, I don't know if this family have children.
Yeah. Well, no, otherwise you would have just been living with another couple that would have kids.
Yeah.
Definitely. I think two or three kids, I'd imagine.
Yeah, yeah. You can absolutely determine the number of children from this email. You're right. You're totally right. So, look, Jess, it's a difficult one. It's a difficult one, depending on how embarrassed you are about it.
Just this is one of those ones that I think we both want to hear back and see what happens and hopefully it resolves.
Yeah, I think I agree with Tom. I think wait for them to get in touch. But I would just make a joke about it.
Yeah.
You know, I saw you found Mr. Buzz.
Yeah. Or if you go to the house for dinner, just sort of make a joke about it and just say, oh, I'm just heading upstairs. So, oh, shit, I forgot my vibrator.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Just going to go. Oh, God, I was about to say something horrendous there.
Yeah.
So,
thank God you put the brakes on that one, Big Ben.
Yeah, absolutely. right. Good luck, Jess.
Thank you, Jess.
I don't really feel like we've answered your problem, really.
No.
They were adamant they wanted to stay in touch. So stay in touch doesn't suggest that, like, they're going to be meeting up.
No.
Like, you know, just stay in touch. So, yeah, Tom, I think you're absolutely right. I don't think you should message apologising, Jess. You've got nothing to apologise for.
No, Jess, you are in the...
You've done nothing wrong.
Jess, you're a saint.
We need to be more affirmative in this. Jess, there is nothing wrong with having a vibrator.
And Jess, you're a friggin' saint. So, yeah, you're an absolute legend. Do not succumb to their power play.
Yeah, so just leave it and they can get in touch. And what will happen is, in a while, you'll forget about it. And then maybe in 3 years' time, you'll be having some night out, all of you, some sort of reunion, and they'll go, you know, one of you will bring it up and it'll be a hilarious thing to look back on. But you have got... Do not apologise for having a vibrator.
No.
Ever. Unless you're in an airport or something. And you put it in your hand luggage.
Yeah.
Case, that's super weird.
Yeah. Robsky, thank you, baby.
Thank you so much, Tom. It's been a lovely ride.
Yeah.
It's been beautiful. We will see you guys again
Wednesday.
Wednesday for the next episode of the podcast. Keep smiling. Keep shining.
Wow. Go on.
Keep grinding. No, don't keep grinding. I hate that phrase.
Keep shining. Keep shining. Knowing you can always count on me. For sure, that's what friends are for.
Oh, there we go. Speaking of music, do you know what I just started listening to on Apple Music?
Yeah.
I listened to a playlist called I Miss UK Garage, right?
Yeah.
And you know what, guys? If you fancy a little trip down memory lane, just pop that on. A couple of classics on there that I think you're going to like.
You are too cute for school, kid.
All right, guys, take care. We love you very much. Peace out. enough respect.
Peace and love in heavens above.
If you have a problem, opinion, feedback, or anything at all, please email us at wolfowlpod@gmail.com. That's wolfowlpod@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you. Thank you.